Chamber of Commerce will come to order at 3:17. Today is Monday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. With us, we have the full committee, Representative Miller, Representative Seaton, Representative Holmes, Representative Johnson, Representative Sadler, Representative Thompson, and myself, Chair Olson. Let the record reflect we have a quorum. Please turn off your BlackBerries, cell phones. The first item on today's agenda is House Bill 114. It's a carryover from last week. Short title is Opt Out of Charitable Giving Program. We heard this first on February 7th. During the hearing, there were some questions and concerns expressed, and I believe the sponsor has worked with those members to address those concerns. With us to present a brief recap is Jane Pearson. Welcome back, Jane. Jane is staff to Representative Steve Thompson, and please state your name and affiliation, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson, and this bill is an opt-out charitable giving program. It'll be a roundup to the next dollar on your cooperative bill. As we said, it's small giving amounts. It gives small, under $10,000 amounts to organizations and individuals in need of aid. There is an application process for them to apply. Most cooperatives establish a separate 501c3 organization to oversee these monies. And I think one of the issues we came up with that was a problem was putting some sideboards on this.
I believe we have an amendment. In fact, Representative Thompson, do you care to introduce an amendment by chance?
Thank you, Chair Olson. I move that we adopt Amendment A.4.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion, and I believe that's what you're going to address now, Jane. I hope.
For the record, this is still Jane Pearson. And really what this does is put some sideboards on what can be given for. The language is the monies would be for the relief of poverty, distress, and other conditions of general public concern, but not for religious organizations, political organizations, organized labor unions, or unorganized labor units, or for any political purpose.
Who has the first question for Jane? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you define general public concern?
I do not, Representative Johnson, through the chair, I do not have a definitive answer for you on general public concern. We were looking for charitable, and that too had many definitions. This is something I'd be willing to work on as it goes to before the Judiciary Committee and to see if it could be better defined.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would encourage that. I don't think it's significant enough to impede the progress of this legislation. I think if we don't define that could be almost anything.
Well, I think we're blessed with having at least one person on the next committee. Two people. I'm sorry.
And the sponsor.
Oh, and the sponsor.
And the sponsor, so yeah. Maybe directly. So maybe
I don't think all three of them are going to forget. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is an unorganized labor union?
For the record.
No jokes.
Yeah. Representative Seaton through the chair. Would Representative Miller like to answer that?
Representative Miller.
Yes, sir.
You want to touch that one?
No, sir. But thank you for extending the courtesy.
Representative Seaton through the chair. I believe an unorganized labor union. I'm not sure the exact definition of one, but I'm sure there would be programs and labor organizations that have programs that are put together and whatnot that this would also fall under.
Follow up?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to figure out what we're trying to get to here. I mean, if we have a company that wants to, you know, help some individuals build a house, but they're all in the same company, and so they're employees of the company, does that mean they're prevented from receiving these funds or building on this house because they're unorganized labor?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I believe the intent would be that the person who needs the repairs would be the recipient of the grant, and they could pay or organized or unorganized labor union for the repairs as to, you know, a competitive bid process or however they chose to do it. So the, it would actually not be a labor organization that was receiving the funds. It would be the individual in need of the charity.
We do have Ed Steffen online. Maybe we could. Ed, are you with us?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Any chance that you could answer that question?
And is the question whether or not, excuse me, through the chair, this is Ed Sniffen, Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law in Anchorage. If the question is whether or not an individual recipient could contract with an organized labor union or unorganized labor organization for, like, repairing a roof or something, I think Jane is absolutely correct that the intent would be that certainly that it's the recipient of the donation that I think is the focus of this language, and would provide some restriction on paying the labor unions directly, for example. But if there was a carpenter who belonged to the local union hall who happened to be the guy fixing the roof, and the recipient of the money wanted to hire him, I can't imagine that there would be any restriction on that.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I don't think that that's what we're talking about on page 3, lines 13 and 14, which is what we're replacing. It's the purpose of the money, not, or at least I don't see that it's who receives the money. And so if this is the purpose, the relief of poverty, distress, or other conditions, but not for religious organizations, political organizations, unorganized or unorganized labor unions, are, I guess I'm trying to understand the structure here is whether that's the purpose or is that the who can receive the funds?
Through the chair, Representative, my understanding, I've worked with Jane a little bit on some of this language, so maybe I can back up and answer one question that came up earlier, and that is, can we define condition of general public concern a little better? And maybe we can, and I'm happy to work with Jane on that, but I wanted to point out that we took this language from AS 45.68, which is our charitable solicitation statute in Alaska, and it defines a charitable organization to mean an organization that is formed for the relief of poverty, distress, or other conditions of general public concern. And there are some other statutes in Alaska that also use that phrase, and unfortunately that phrase isn't defined for any of those other statutes either. So it's kind of a moving target. We'll see if we can do better. But on to your question about whether it's the purpose for this donation that we're focused on or if it's the individual, I don't know that it really matters too much, but I understand what you're saying. I think if Golden Valley Electric wanted to just make a donation to the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers so they could, oppose an attempt to de-unionize a particular shop, it's that kind of donation that I think Golden Valley would be restricted from under this language. As long as the purpose of the grant wasn't going to benefit the mission of an organized labor union or a political organization or a religious organization, I think this is the language that would allow that to happen. And you raise a good point that there may be a way we can define that a little better to focus on the purpose as opposed to maybe the individual.
Okay, thank you. I just am having problems with the construction here of having both the purpose and the kind of the recipients in the same line here that I'm not sure how that works. So I'll scratch my head some more, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stiffen, you continue to use unorganized labor organization. And in the amendment, it actually says unorganized labor unions. Would it be beneficial, or would it help if we took unorganized labor unions out and put unorganized labor organization? Because that's a term you continue to use when you talk about this.
Yes, through the chair, Representative, I was listening to the prior comment about, well, what is an unorganized labor union? And I think that's right. Using the term union sort of suggests that there is an organized entity somewhere. So I thought it would make more sense to say organized labor unions or other unorganized labor organization would perhaps resolve that issue. But as Jane said, we can work on those things with the Judiciary Committee as well and maybe clean up some of that language.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think my point would be someone like AGC, who is not a union, but they're organized labor association, or they are organized in some. They are unorganized as not in terms of what you think of, you know, signing up and becoming an organized bargaining unit. So they're not necessarily a union, but they are an organization. And I'm not sure that doesn't clarify a little bit. If you don't say unorganized union, because I struggle with what that means as well, Mr. Chairman. So,
yeah, Representative Seaton.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe that clarifies somewhat where we're going. I'm trying to get to the intent. Let's say AGC. If AGC has a building project where they're building or they're putting roofs on for people that have, you know, we've had a windstorm come through and blew off 20 roofs in these houses, and AGC comes along and wants to put roofs on these houses. We're saying, well, you're an unorganized labor organization, therefore none of this money can go to those roofs through you. Each individual has to come through and apply. I'm just unclear as to the mechanism of what we're doing.
I wouldn't think so, but I'd defer to Ed Sneppen. Ed, could you help us out on that one?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, and I heard that question, and I understand the confusion there. I think AGC, for example, is probably it's a contractors association. I don't know if they would fit within the definition of a labor organization, since they don't really hire labor or have laborers on staff there. It's an affiliation of entities that do have labor organization interests, though. So that's an interesting example. But I know what the purpose and the intent here is to allow someone to give a donation, the ultimate result of which is to put a house on like a disabled senior's home. And if that donation had to go through an organized labor organization of some kind, I don't think that should be prohibited. As long as the grant wasn't to that organization, and it was, here is some money, AFL-CIO, can do with it what you want, and as a result of that, they end up putting some roofs on disabled senior housing. It would have to be earmarked for that specific purpose, so it may make more sense to put the parameters on this definition to focus on the purpose of the funds, and if those funds have to be channeled through some entities in some way, that may be okay, so long as the purpose of the donation is met somehow. And this has been a good discussion for me, because I've got some thoughts going through my head on how we might be able to clean this up, and we'll continue to work on that.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I hate to disagree with Ed, because I normally lose, but I think the purpose should be that it does go directly to the end recipient, and that they are, in fact, able to go out and hire whomever they would choose to hire, as opposed to having it go through some organization to do the work. So, for my money, the purpose is to go to the end user. And then once that's happened, I have very little grief with whatever they do with it, as long as they end up with a roof on their house, to carry the example a little further. So I would have problems with it going directly through, as opposed to directly to the end user. And I may lose this one again, but.
No, and through the chair, Ed Stiffen here again. No, I don't disagree with that at all. I think we both mean the same thing here. I may not have said it as well as you have, so I certainly defer.
I think we're all going in the same direction. It's just how we're gonna get there. Representative Miller.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't see anything specifically written in the language, and then I look over the group or the list of folks who have received some of these distributions from other co-ops, and it certainly seems to me that, you know, we might be able to get around part of our problem here if we just insert something in the language indicating that it's not for profit businesses. So that these things always end up, and I know you said a minute ago, Jane, that you had trouble with trying to insert the language charitable organization because that has a lot of tentacles to it as well. But it does seem to me that the list I look in here on talking points that came out, all of these organizations seem to be nonprofit organizations or individuals.
Representative Miller, through the chair, I think that's a good idea, and I do promise to continue working with Mr. Sniffen and see if we can get this language refined for judiciary.
All right. Mr.
Follow-up?
I might also recommend that the language that was proposed in amendment on line 4, if we just drop the word unorganized labor unions and put other labor organizations, might work. Maybe we should defer to Mr. Sniffen's opinion on that.
Mr. Sniffen?
Yes, through the chair, I have made that correction on my draft I'm looking at here. I think that does make sense. Other labor organizations would include, I think, the intent. I also think the restriction to nonprofits is something that we had toyed with a little bit before, and I think with the restrictions that include not for religious or political organizations helps, because if you have a language that says any entity that is recognized by the IRS under Section 501c3, which is essentially all the nonprofits, that ropes in religious organizations. So if you wanted to exclude those entities as potential recipients, we would have to exclude them, and I think this language might do that. So we've got some good good direction going forward that we can, I think, make all these things happen.
I get you?
No, I'm...
Representative Holmes?
I mean, I guess my question at this point is, do we adopt the amendment and then keep tinkering with it, or do we not adopt the amendment and keep tinkering with it? Because it sounds like the will of the committee is to kind of move this along and keep working on it in Judiciary Committee, which I'm happy to keep doing, but that's my main question at this point.
We have bills previews heard for Wednesday.
Yes.
I'll bring it back to the committee. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, I am not opposed to moving this bill out with this amendment. I would, and some very clear direction. I think we're building a public radio, a public record, and I think that goes a long way if it ever actually ends up someplace other than the legislature or the administration in the third branch of government. But I would be uncomfortable sending this out without this amendment and a clear message that we do want it fixed. With the amendment, I'd be very comfortable with sending it. I do have a lot of confidence in both the members here that are on judiciary that they will address it. But I would like to see this, as imperfect as it is, moved out with the amendment as opposed to moved out without.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. We're still in a discussion of the amendment. Is that correct? I'm very comfortable with not for religious organizations, political organizations, organized labor unions, or for any political purpose. I'm just unsure of, I mean, we talked about AGC as being a potential for another labor organization or unorganized labor union or, something like that. But I think that Mr. Sniffen told us that that probably wouldn't qualify. So I'm trying to get my mind around what entities we're talking about under other labor organizations that aren't labor unions, and why we would want to in a small village or whatever, or in an electrical co-op, want to have that restriction? And if there's a, if that describes an entity that we think it's like a political organization or a religious organization that we wouldn't want to go through, I fully understand. I'm just not understanding what that would be, or whether we're describing something that we might not want to have included.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this question is to the sponsor or the sponsor's representative. After labor, organized labor unions, we deleted or unorganized labor unions out of the amendment. Would that serve the purpose of the sponsor and maybe also address Representative Seaton's concern?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I do believe that would address it.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'd like to propose amendment to amendment number one as a friendly amendment. Amendment number one to amendment number one, mm-hmm. which would be on line four, after organized labor unions, delete or unorganized labor unions.
I'll object for discussion.
And I'll also consider that a conceptual amendment in case the drafters need to work on it and clean my language up, which has happened before.
To all of us?
Yeah.
On a regular basis. Representative Thompson.
Yeah, I consider that a friendly amendment to the amendment.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, since we have Ed Sniffen on the line, if we could have him weigh in on what we might be doing by deleting that language. I don't think it's a problem, but...
Mr. Sniffen.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, thank you. I've been trying to come up with my mind here as we've been talking about what a labor organization, an unorganized labor organization would be, and I can't come up with a good, solid, clear example, so I can't see how this would detract from the intent of the sponsors, but I'll have to leave that to the sponsors.
Are there any further objections to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I'll remove my objection.
That brings the amended conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two, also known as A.4. What are the wishes of the committee on that? And I will lift my objection to the amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton.
Is this amendment number two or amendment number one that we're...
It's
amendment number two.
It's number two.
This is amendment number two.
Okay. Yeah, we had amendment number one on the 7th.
That was the homework.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no further objection, we will move that out with the as a conceptual amendment to. And I believe we still had public testimony open. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, is there anybody online? Nobody online. That'll bring the amended bill back to the committee. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would this be the appropriate time to offer a slight wording change? I guess it's a conceptual amendment to the bill as amended. It's just a very, very slight wording change.
And where is that?
This would be on page 3 of House Bill 114, version A for Alpha. My conceptual amendment would be to, on line 2, delete the words, but does not, and insert the words, by an amount not to, such that with now
is
reading...
Is that on line 2 or line 3?
I'm sorry, line 3.
Three.
It starts on 2, continues to 3. So again, delete the words, but does not, and insert the words, by an amount not to. It would then read that rounds the monthly bill of a member to the next whole dollar amount by an amount not to exceed 99 cents a month.
I'll object for discussion.
It's a grammar thing. what it says right now, the subject is a program that rounds the monthly bill but does not exceed. I suspect that a monthly bill is going to exceed 99 cents a month. So yep. I hope that clarifies what the intent of the bill is.
Yes, it does.
So that would be amendment number 3, conceptual amendment number 3.
We're glad this is going to the education committee.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. And is it clear that rounding the bill to the next whole dollar is up? I was going to say we should round up to the next whole dollar amount, unless that's.
Would you like to put that in three, though?
Would you like to put it
in your.
Yes, yes, I guess yes. I would. That rounds, I would say, up to the next whole dollar amount. So insert the word up after the word member on line two. So on line two, after the word member, insert the word up. I guess that will all be part of the same conceptual amendment number three. Okay.
Any further discussion?
I'm encouraged to read the whole darn thing. So again, conceptual amendment three does this on the House Bill 114, version A, page two, line two. Page three, line two. Okay, after the word member, insert the word up. Then delete the word but does not, and inserts the words by an amount not to. Good copy on that?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yep. And you have the objection?
I'll remove my objection.
Any further objection to conceptual amendment number three? Any more conceptual amendments?
Sir, no, sir.
What are the wishes of the committee?
That's a friendly amendment.
Any further discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm assuming you're looking for a motion since no one else raised their hand or was quiet.
I was fishing for one.
I thought so. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House Bill number 114, A, as amended, with individual recommendations and attached physical amendments.
Is there any opposition?
And I might add that was attached zero physical note, Mr. Chairman.
Correct. And seeing no opposition, we'll move this bill out of committee and onto Judiciary with the intention of having several clean amendments for him. And with that, we'll take a brief at ease. Next item on the agenda is House Bill 130, and we've got Rob here. Rob Earl from the Rep. Aaron's office will be addressing this bill. This may look familiar. We saw it in two versions last year. It moved along quite well until the end of session. That's all I'll say. Thanks for joining us, Rob, and please tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rob Earl, staff representative Heron. HB 130 is sponsored by this committee, so we thank you for that. And the main point of HB 130 is that if a municipality wants to consider mandating fire sprinklers in all new construction, the ordinance must first go through an expanded public process. The parties involved with this legislation mostly fall into two groups. On the one hand, we have the home builders and the realtors, and they're concerned about a blanket mandate on fire sprinklers raising the cost of homes. On the other hand, we have the Fire Chiefs Association, who rightly and unsurprisingly promote expanded installation of fire sprinklers. After multiple hearings, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, last session, a compromise between these two groups was reached on this issue, and that compromise is the legislation before you today. We know of no opposition. The bill is neither pro nor anti fire sprinkler. The legislation does not prohibit Alaskans from choosing to install these systems in their homes. The legislation does say that a municipality may not adopt an ordinance to require a sprinkler system in all new residential homes with in all new residential buildings with one or two dwelling units unless the municipality first do three things: comply with the municipal hearing requirements already in statute, at least 30 days before the first public hearing for the ordinance, publish a summary of the ordinance and a notice of the time and place of each public hearing, and lastly, schedule at least three public hearings to be held within a 60 to 180-day time period on the proposed ordinance. Mr. Chair, the sponsor does not believe that the decision about fire sprinklers being required in homes is appropriate to be decided at the local it does believe that the decision should be decided at the local level. Back. The question is, does such a potentially expensive code adoption, such as requiring sprinkler systems, deserve a more robust public hearing process? And we think it does. And perhaps, Mr. Chair, if I could be so bold, the committee should look upon this legislation as a gift, because it's not that often that such a clear and sensible path forward presents itself.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I notice all through the bill it says all new single-family residential buildings. What about if it mandates retrofitting existing buildings? Does it still require the same notice, or can they just do that without the same notice?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I believe they could do that without the notice, because they could also require just like a section of town, if it's hilly or something, they could require that area to have fire sprinklers. It's only if they can't require all new construction, no blanket mandate. So I think
he said it was simple.
I can't tell you the road was bumpy last year, but by the end of the session, everybody was singing the same song, and we'll have a number of people to testify today. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't think we have any opposition to it. But it was a lengthy process getting to this version of the bill. You remember this one from last year?
Mr. Chairman, I didn't sit on this committee last year.
I think it was in several others, too.
Several others it was, yeah. But I'm concerned that, and I don't want to make the road more bumpy, but I think that if new construction requires this kind of notification, an ordinance requiring retrofitting should require even more, because that's going to be more expensive and more onerous on homeowners and encompass everyone, not just new construction. So I can't see where we would want to limit it, this kind of public scrutiny, to just new construction. So I'm not going to throw a wrench in it, although maybe I already have. I just think it's worth considering that if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander.
Rob, got any comments on that?
No, sir.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly like the intention of this, and as you said, it does seem to be somewhat of a clear way forward. But I, you know, the first time I read this, the first thing that went through my mind, and I know Steve Thompson is in my same neighborhood, we have any number of constituents that have dry cabins. There is no availability to put a sprinkler in there. It's not possible. Can't be done. Now, what I think the language in here is that's going to defer to the local municipality, and that may be the exception they will need to make. I just wondered if anyone had any thoughts on that.
To the chair, Representative Miller, that's a very good point, and that's part of the reason that we wanted the expanded public process, because Alaska's unique, and people are in dry cabins and all sorts of things like that. So I think this should... It understands that contingency and counts for it.
Representative Sadler.
A question, thank you, Chair. Rob, question on page 2, it says that notwithstanding the publication requirements of et cetera, it says that there must be published a summary of the ordinance and a notice of the time or place. What's the intention of the same publication requirements? It says this shall be published. It doesn't say where it should be published. I'm just wondering if there's a definition, you know, newspapers of general circulation, you know, whatever.
I'm sorry.
My question is, it says that there shall be published a summary of the ordinance and a notice of time and place. It doesn't say where that should be published, in what mediums or what publications.
To the chair, Representative Sadler.
Unless I missed
Good question. I guess there isn't a requirement on where, but maybe now would be a good time to point out the what is in statute now for municipal hearing requirements, if I can find it. AS29.25.020, the municipality must introduce the ordinance in writing. And then a public hearing may be required by majority vote. And then at least 5 days before public hearing, a summary of the ordinance shall be published for the time and place of the hearing. So it looks like it's not specified in current statute either, unless I'm mistaken.
We have a representative of the Municipal League who slipped out but is signed up to testify, but I believe that varies by political subdivision. I think they can, but I would defer to Ms. Wasserman when she gets back on that to touch that one. Ed, are you still online by any chance? That's what I thought.
Well, they're in my first them? Lifeline.
My intent is just to make sure that if the purpose is to inform the public, that we make sure that this is published in a place the public will see it or has a chance to see it.
We've got one mayor here, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that there is a lot of different definitions of that. When I was city mayor, we were publishing in the newspaper all of our upcoming legislation, and we looked at it that it also was some wiggle room in there where we could publish it on the internet instead of in the newspaper, which saved us a lot of money. But we did go ahead and then say, you know, meeting coming up, look online to see the agenda. I think that that might hold true on this.
As I recall from last year, it did vary like that, and I think different cities and boroughs had different deals. But it's, as I recall, we spent a fair amount of time on that. Who else heard it besides me? Lindsay. I'm Representative Holmes. I'm sorry.
Okay. Representative Holmes. I answered all of them.
What's your recollection?
You know, I know that we spent a lot of time on publication issues, but I can't honestly remember whether it was on this bill or on another bill. So I'm not entirely sure. But I think it's probably correct that there's some difference by municipality as to what each municipality requires.
Yeah. We do have Alpheus Bullard online from Ledge Legal.
Oh, he just
dropped off. I don't blame him.
He heard you calling.
Scared him.
Oh, dear.
Scared him off.
Closed his books. I think what I'll do, if there are no further questions for Rob, I think we'll start with the people that are in the room that came to testify, then we'll get down to Kathy Wasserman at the end to clarify the notification issue. And unless there are any further questions of the committee for Rob. Errol Champion, please join us. Welcome, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Errol Champion, and I'm representing the Alaska Association of Realtors. I was here last year, and we thought we had this bill passed, and for whatever reason, it didn't make it, so we're back again this year. I want to first thank this committee for introducing this bill. It's very important to the sale of homes and trying to hold prices down. I'm not going to go through all the points we made last year, but if you'd like, I will answer any questions. Otherwise, we urge your adoption of HB 130.
Any questions? Thanks again for joining us. And, Representative Johnson, do you want to, by chance?
No. Oh, to move it?
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Thanks again, Mr. Champion.
Thank you.
You got off light. Alan Wilson. Welcome back. Also, familiar face from last year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's good to be back before you again on this topic.
Please state your name and affiliation.
I'm sorry, Alan Wilson, representing Alaska State Home Builders Association. I am a Juno builder. As a co-chair of the Legislative Committee for the Alaska State Home Building Association, we obviously support this bill. It isn't a compromise bill. One of the questions that came up about the new construction versus existing construction, I can tell you that the main reason we're before you is that in the prior codes, the sprinkler requirement was in the appendix of the code, with the codes that are being reviewed now and are soon to be adopted, the sprinkler issue has been moved into the body of the code. So when different code agencies review the codes, many of them have this local amendment thing they do, which a lot of times deals with insulation values and vapor barriers and different things. And it was always our concern that that would be overlooked, the codes would be adopted, and one day you wake up and you have a mandatory sprinkler requirement. With residential existing construction, I think everyone's a little more tuned in to the cost factor associated with retrofitting properties. So
you feel comfortable that the hearing process is in this version would be adequate to cover the inclusion, or at least the public would be well aware of what was happening for it?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the with the extended hearing process, anytime people hear sprinklers now, they'll be geared up, and I would just imagine that any municipality would want to follow that same process, whether it's new or existing construction.
Any questions for Mr. Wilson? Thanks again. Kathy Wasserman, we have lots of questions for you. Welcome back. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. Sorry I had to run out so quickly, but I'm so happy to be back. We were one of the players last year in the famous sprinkler bill, and I'm just mainly here to say that we also are not opposed to this bill and are happy with the way that it's currently written.
I think we have some questions on public noticing, and it can vary by political subdivision, I would assume.
Yes. There are many municipalities that already give the notice that is in this current bill. Some will have to come up to speed, but there are very few municipalities that this will really, really affect, you know, just the major large ones. But they will be ready and willing to do whatever.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just to be clear, the discussion, I think you were out of the room when we were having a discussion on page 2 of the bill. It requires that hearings, that they publish a summary of the ordinance and notice of time and place. And the question is the word publish there on line 8 of page 2. What does that mean? Does that mean publish in the newspaper? Does that mean publish? And our assumption on the committee is that to some extent what the word publish mean might be determined by municipal code and might differ from municipality to municipality. Is that correct?
Representative Holmes, through the chair, yes. I know in my former community it meant to publish in three places, and that could mean on the wall of the city hall, on the boardwalk, in front of the bar, wherever you thought that it would be seen, or three times in front of the bar. In most large communities, it's stated in the ordinance, in which papers or radio, or so that is pretty clear. And most communities have a very good posting record and know where things need to be posted and follow it very closely.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Ms. Wasserman? Thanks again for being available.
Thank you, sir.
And we've got a few people outside of the building that would like to discuss this bill. Amy Cryer, are you with us, Amy?
I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thanks for joining us today and taking the time to participate.
Thank you. My name is Amy Cryer. I'm the owner-broker of Advantage Alaska Realty here in Fairbanks, and I'm also here to speak in support of HB 130. Requiring single-family homes and duplexes to have sprinkler systems would increase the already high cost of new construction here in the interior and prohibit many families from being able to afford a new home. Rent in the interior is already extremely high, and an increase in the cost to build duplexes would be passed on to renters, or more likely result in the lack of new duplexes being built, forcing renters to remain in older, less efficient homes. Maintaining a sprinkler system which would likely require periodic inspection but also be costly, and I'm not sure that we have the number of qualified professionals necessary to maintain and inspect these systems if they were required in single-family homes and duplexes. Inspections would also be necessary when a property was sold, increasing the cost of the sale, especially in a home where the system wasn't properly maintained and needed repairs. It's my understanding that this part of the code change was initially intended for densely populated urban multifamily housing, and we have a lot of rural homes in Alaska that aren't connected to public water systems. Maintaining a pressurized system in a home with a well or holding tank isn't very practical, possibly requiring a generator, as well pumps aren't functional in the case of a power outage, not to mention dry cabins like Representative Miller mentioned earlier. And here in Alaska, there's also an increased risk of freezing pipes that can cause serious water damage and related mold issues. I think this would result in more insurance claims and higher insurance premiums. I, too, share the concern about retrofitting with regard to remodels. If, as a result of an extensive renovation or significant addition, it was required that an entire structure be brought up to current code, the cost of retrofitting a sprinkler system to an existing structure would be astronomical. So, it's my opinion that the costs and potential downsides outweigh the benefits for single-family homes and duplexes, and as required by HB 130, public notice should be given, cost-benefit studies should be made available to the public, and public input should be considered before a municipality can adopt this portion of the code. That's it for me, but thank you very much for introducing this bill and
hearing. Oh, thank you. Will you take one question, please?
Thank you. And did I understand you are a real estate broker or agent? Is that?
I am.
Can you tell me how a bank would treat the financing if we've got sprinklers in the code and then we have all this notice and someone wants to retrofit a home and it's in the code? How would the bank treat the financing of that? Would they mandate that be brought up code? Because I know the case with windows and fire escapes and egress and stuff, you have to upgrade that before you can refinance. Would that also fall into the inability to finance a home if you didn't retrofit your home with a sprinkler if it were in the code?
Well, I don't believe here for a refinance, an inspection is required. If it was required and the lender wanted a copy of the inspection report and they required things to be to current code, that certainly would come into play. And financing would be denied.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thanks again. Looks like we've got Glenda Finken online from the Alaska Association of Realtors. Are you with us, Glenda?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, and I remember you from last year, too.
Okay. This is Glenda Finken. I'm the broker owner of REMAX in Kenai, Alaska, and I'm here with the Alaska Association of Realtors. And I strongly encourage the support of Bill 130. We are, realtors stand for affordable housing, and this would add considerable cost to require a sprinkler system, not only in the construction, but the maintenance, resale, insurance. So to keep in mind that we can't even get current homeowners to keep batteries in their smoke alarms. I don't know what they would do with sprinkler systems. And we believe that people affected should be advised of the incredible burden before the governing body adopts the new rule, and that citizens should not be subject to this mandate without notification. And I think HB 130 is a great bill that is proactive in response to a national movement to require sprinkler systems, and I think it's very detrimental in Alaska.
So your view hasn't changed. Your view hasn't changed since last year.
Absolutely not.
Thanks again, Glenn. Any questions for Ms. Finken? Thanks again, Jeff Tucker, Alaska Association of Fire Chiefs.
Yep. Can you hear me, sir?
Yep. I got your letter in front of us. We circulated. Please state your name and affiliation.
Sure. I'm sorry. This is Jeff Tucker. I'm the president of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. I'm here to comment on House Bill 130. House Bill 130 is a piece of legislation that has been worked on for the last 2 years throughout the House and Senate. It is a bill that the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association does not oppose and encourages the adoption in this current format. It's through a lot of long, hard work and to get the bill to the point it's at, and we'd like to see it passed in this current format.
Thanks, Jeff. Any questions for Chief Tucker, particularly from the two guys from Fairbanks? Seeing none, thanks again, Jeff. Paul Michelson, are you with us? Mr. Michelson?
Are you there?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, for the record, sir, my name is Paul Michelson, M-I-C-H-E-L-S-O-H-N, and I am co-chair of the Legislative Committee for the Alaska State Home Building Association. I appreciate, as everybody else has, for you getting this bill and offering this bill up, sir. I've been working on this bill, for over two years. I've been working on this issue for 5 years with the National Association of Home Builders. I can answer two, I can maybe bring some light to two of the previous questions answered. I am, like Mr. Wilson, in total support of this bill. I think we've come a long way, and I think we just ran out of time last year, and I think we'd appreciate it if this bill could be passed on today. Or for a vote.
Well, I'd like to clarify one thing. The thanks goes to the two offices last year that had this bill, one in the House and one in the Senate. And I think the real thanks for coming up with a compromise bill goes to those people. But thanks again, Mr. Michelson. Is there anybody else online? Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify? And with that, I'll close up public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 2, line 18, where it has Act takes effect July 1st, 2011, we get out of here. This gets passed. The governor signs it. It doesn't appear that this requires municipalities to pass any regulations or the department to pass any regulations, but I just wanted to clarify that on the record that we don't have an effective date that's going to be before any necessary regulations could be promulgated.
I wouldn't believe the first time we've had that issue, but Rob, do you have any comments on that?
Maybe Mr. Rules Chair can.
I think we're going to take a brief. It is. We've got a couple people looking at the.
Thank you.
And Representative Seaton, do you have a question on the effective date?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I was concerned about having the July 1st effective date, depending upon when the bill is passed. It seems to add some confusion. Require potentially a future amendment, and it seems that if we just remove the effective date as a conceptual amendment, then we would be at the same position as unless, and we're in discussion here, so I guess the question is, if it would pass within the next month, then it would be the 90 days would be sooner than July 1st. And I'm just trying to figure out how this would all work, and I'd like some committee discussion on that topic.
Representative Holmes?
Mr. Chairman, it seems like the effective date isn't all, I mean, it gives you a date certain, but it seems like it's not really all that critical in this case. 90 days after the bill's signed is probably fine. And if for some reason the bill were to sort of languish for a bit and not get passed until the second year of the session, somebody would have to remember to come back in and amend this to make it a year later. It just seems like 90 days after being signed with a bill like this is probably adequate and avoids having to have a higher majority for the effective date bill.
So hypothetically, we could make a conceptual amendment, or somebody could consider one to delete line 18, page 2.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might, also in the title it says "and provide an effective date," we'd need to delete that as well.
And that's why we do conceptual amendments.
That's right. I wanted it on the record.
Hi, Mr. Chair. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd make a motion, conceptual amendment number
one,
that we delete section 3 and the appropriate language in the title.
Any discussion? Any opposition? We'll move amendment number 1, deleting section 3 and adjusting the title. That'll bring the amended bill back to the committee for discussion. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when I first saw this, I thought it was something different. You know, it scared me that we were going to start requiring single-family homes to have sprinkler systems. But I see now that it is a protection that the public cannot have it mandated on them, that it gives them a process that lets them take a look at what it's going to do to their housing market, what it's going to do to cost of housing. But it does allow in the future for a possibility that a municipality might have their residents wanting to have this in place. So it does allow it, but it also protects the public, and this is a good thing. I'm going to support it.
Was there anything further?
That's not.
Oh, you want to move it out of committee?
Oh, yes, I will. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move House Bill 130 out of committee with attached zero physical notes.
As amended.
Individual recommendations.
Pardon? With individual recommendations.
With individual recommendations, yes.
Seeing no opposition, we'll move the bill out of committee, and with that, we will adjourn at 4:20.
Yeah. Okay.